Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio on this mostly sunny afternoon in the city of Chicago as we get closer and closer to summer weather. There was a great study, done by Motley Fool, and they looked at romantic sort of guideposts, you know, first kiss, first night over, first traveling together and all that, and then sort of integrated those with when people in their relationships share information about their financial situation. And couples are more likely to share complete and total medical histories than they are to talk about their credit score. We'll talk to Elise Glink about that a little bit later in the program. But we start on Mondays, usually with the folks from Chicago. Inno, Catherine Davis is in the studio. Catherine, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Jim Dahlke's on a phone line today because, well, he can work from home.
Hey, Steve, you know, it's about 10 degrees warmer out in the suburbs than downtown, so I'm enjoying every degree of warmth here.
So not only can he work from home, he can be spiteful from home, so that's really nice to hear.
Be outside tanning.
Right. I'm sure you're doing, well, you're the boss, right? So you can do whatever you want.
That's right.
Okay, we'll jump on from there. Catherine, you wrote a story that I was reading last week, and it's about protein-laden coffee, which I hadn't thought about till I read it. Not a buddy who's really into bulletproof coffee. Is that the same sort of thing?
It's similar. You know, the protein in bulletproof is from oil and butter mainly, whereas this new Chicago startup is from pea and quinoa protein.
And I like the story because this is sort of a necessity, mother of invention kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the founder, his name is Lucas Garza, and for most of his life, he suffered with postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Well played. I like that.
And basically, this is kind of a heart condition that affects circulation. And so generally, you're feeling really lightheaded and tired, and it's hard to be active.
Okay.
And so, you know, there hasn't been a lot of research around this disease and ways to really curb the symptoms, but he found that a vegan diet helped, but that he still needed high protein levels. And so he's like, I'm going to make a protein coffee, also make it vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO, etc.
So the protein coffee wasn't part of the diet that made him better or feel better, but because the vegan diet didn't necessarily give him the boost, this is a supplement.
Exactly.
Okay. And so is he up and running, or where is he here? It's called Powerhouse Coffee, right?
Yep, Powerhouse Coffee. He launched it last year, and right now he's still in the development stages. So he's actually in the Future Founders Accelerator Program, which is run out of 1871. He said that they've been very helpful in him getting this project off the ground, and he plans to be selling it by August.
And so you can pre-order if you want now.
That's right.
Is protein-laden coffee a thing?
Well, that's the thing. Like, Bulletproof really is kind of the only player, but of course they're not vegan, right? Because they have butter in their coffee. But I think what's becoming more popular is protein coffee creamers. So Vital Proteins, they're based here. They make a ton of coffee creamers, as well as Unicreamer, which is another Chicago
startup.
And
what's the point of that? It's just a different way to get your protein powder?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a lot of people are moving towards, you know, low meat diets or vegetarian and vegan options, you know, they need other ways to get the levels of protein they need.
All right, so there's that. Jim Dahlke wrote something that I guess this was up in Milwaukee, right? It's not on the Chicago site, but it has to do with, well, a man that Chicago fans hold dear in their hearts, Aaron Rodgers, who has a startup for fellow athletes? Or explain this for me, Jim.
That's right. So Aaron Rodgers has launched a venture capital fund. So he, along with two other folks who are in the VC world, have launched RX3 Ventures, which is a $50 million fund, and they're going to be sort of exclusively investing in consumer startups. And yes, just like you mentioned, the fund is also made up of a lot of famous people. So think athletes, actors, musicians, well-known entrepreneurs, and basically the idea here is to help them kind of get stake in new consumer brands, but also kind of change the game when it comes to influencer marketing. So rather than just saying, you know, Aaron Rodgers can go out and be the spokesperson for this brand of coffee, for example, he can, you know, make money on that by having equity in the business as well. So It's giving them kind of more of a stake in the businesses that they back and kind of creating a better influencer marketing experience, both kind of from the athlete side, from the famous person side, and from the brand side as well.
So you could have like a baseball player who wants an investment. He invests in this fund, and then if there's a company that they invest in, he could become their endorser?
Exactly. So, yeah, basically, instead of just getting a one-off check from this company, now you actually have equity in the business. So, you know, they would have, you know, more influence, more a desire to kind of promote the business, right? They have more a stake in its success overall. So rather than just doing a one-off commercial, you're really kind of having more buy-in in the business kind of overall.
And have they made any investments so far?
They have. They've made a few investments. They've made an investment in Hims, the men's wellness brand. They've also backed kind of a new helmet startup, creating sort of a different design for the football helmet. They backed about six startups so far overall.
And what's Title Tech Town or Title Town Tech coming?
Yeah, so Title Town Tech is actually a brand new venture that's launching just as we speak, and it's a $10 million initial investment from Microsoft and the Packers to kind of create this tech district up in Green Bay. So kind of creating an opportunity to not only back startups kind of in the area and beyond, but also provide workspace, an accelerator, and a lot of opportunities to kind of, you know, spark tech activity in Green Bay, which compared to some of the other cities, especially in Wisconsin, has been a little quieter on this tech and startup front. So this whole initiative really led by Microsoft and the Packers is to really kickstart the startup activity in Green Bay. So a really interesting initiative that was launched, announced a year or so ago, and is just starting to get off the ground here now.
All right, there you go. We've got our Wisconsin update. Jim Dahlke's on a phone line, Catherine Davis in the studio. Catherine wrote about the New Venture Challenge, you know, at the University of Chicago. Some great companies coming out of there. I love these stories about young students and their ideas for companies. Quite a launching ground, the New Venture Challenge. We'll talk about who comes out of there with cash. Jim Dahlke's the senior editor at CNET, not at CNET, at Chicago Inno here in Chicago. He's on a phone line. Catherine Davis writes for Chicago Inno, and she's in the studio this afternoon. Catherine, you wrote about the New Venture Challenge, which is the University of Chicago. It's not an incubator, right? It's a competition.
Exactly. It's a pitch competition for several student startups that have been working in the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship and
Innovation. This year they kept making it bigger, didn't they? Because they said they couldn't narrow it down. There were too many good contestants and things like that.
That's right. Usually there's only 10 companies that compete, and this year there were 12.
And the big winner was MyArtCash. What is MyArtCash?
So they are basically an online matching platform for fine art industry professional dealers and buyers. So if you want a piece of fine art, you can go on this platform and get connected to the artists themselves and buy it directly.
And so is this B2B then or consumer?
So I think it's consumer.
It is consumer.
It has some elements of both.
Okay. And they won what?
They won first place and $365,000, which is the largest check ever given to a student startup. So they were celebrating last Thursday.
Another one that jumped out at me was GG Leagues, which is an esports startup. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so they came in second place and won $220,000. And basically, they work in the esports industry, and they host competitive recreational leagues and live in-person gaming events to try to get that online audience in person.
Jim, have you gone for that yet? Do you watch other people play video games?
No, I haven't gotten into that yet, but that is an industry that is just absolutely taking off, and so I'm not surprised that this startup did well in this competition, because I think that especially in the VC community and like the early stage startup community, there is a lot of interest in trying to like figure out how to monetize this, especially as you think about, you know, generating audience and throwing brand dollars behind that too. So GG Leagues can kind of get all of these esports players together in one place and then kind of connect them to, you know, other services and brands in the industry. So I think there's a big opportunity for this.
Catherine, can a startup do that? It seems like that you would need big money or an established company to sort of create a league. I mean, can you do that from the ground up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of it is an online presence first, you know. I mean, obviously they need the funds to kind of host events and you know, pay for all the things that go into that, but I think it's definitely doable.
All right, one more I want to mention from the winners. It's Aegis.ai, which, if this could work, seems like a great piece of software.
Yeah, so they came in third place, and they are a software company that automatically identifies gun and public safety threats through security camera feeds. And that information then notifies law enforcement and security immediately.
We talk a lot about artificial intelligence. That's what this would be, right? They would be scanning the crowd. So privacy people would not like this, I'm sure. But it's in a secure location. They would scan, pick up signs, and then alert police?
Yeah, so I think the software can identify weapons and the specific kind of weapon, you know, and the idea here is that they can't necessarily prevent crime, but they can prevent the damage that, you know, someone can do if they have a weapon on them.
Okay, so that's all out of the new venture competition, and it out of the Polsky Center. And Jim, there's a new leader, right, that just named for the Polsky Center?
Yeah, that's correct. So the previous leader, John Flavin, left the university last year, headed to become the CFO at a new medical technology company. So John was, you know, a very well-known guy in the community because it's a pretty recognizable position. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, big-time startups that come out of UChicago, and, you know, kind of being the head of the Polsky Center is, you know, a pretty big position within the Chicago Tech. So actually, they just announced a new leader, Jay Schrenkler. He's going to be taking over for John Flavin and beginning the post on August 1st. So really kind of being in charge of overseeing not only the new venture challenge, which we just kind of covered, but kind of all the entrepreneurial activity that's happening out of UChicago, which, of course, as we've talked before, has been the result of companies like Grubhub and Braintree and Tobala and a lot of the companies that we talk to you every Monday about.
Well, you write about the fact that they're going to be expanding or growing overseas as well.
That's right. Yeah, they're going to be growing some of their programs overseas. You know, and they actually just launched a brand new program with the New Venture Challenge called the Alumni New Venture Challenge. So bringing in some of their alumni who've left the university, who are really all over the country and all over the world, allowing them to kind of compete and to take advantage of the NVC brand that's, you know, kind of generated so much interest over the years. So, yeah, this program continues to kind of grow its tentacles all over the place.
What do you think, Catherine? The Polsky name's known worldwide?
That's what they say, yeah. You know, and the thing is, like Jim said, we've gotten a ton of great Chicago tech companies out of there, and it really is, you know, a place where you can see the future of Chicago tech, because many of those companies go on to do,
you know,
we're
talking about esports, and of course there's now sports gambling is going to be legal in Illinois. Can you bet on esports? Do you guys, Catherine, do you know, can you bet on esports legally? I haven't seen
I'm
that.
I'm not
Jim,
sure,
do you know?
Actually.
There are companies that are working on that. I don't know if those betting like platforms are up and available, but there are businesses that are working on esports gambling. So that will be something down the line.
And now that sports gambling is coming to Chicago, I would imagine that's an opportunity for a few startups here to get their foot in the door.
Exactly, yeah. So we spoke to at least one venture capital firm in Chicago that's actively looking for investments in the sports gambling space. So the fact that that is legal and that is kind of taking the next steps for that should certainly open up some opportunities. Jump Capital is the VC firm we were speaking with, and they said there's less of an interest in investing in startup sports books, companies that are going to actually take the bet,
right,
as much as there is kind of these B2B software companies that are helping kind of the existing players in the space, whether it's acquire customers or whether it's, you know, compliance solutions or even kind of creating media brands around sports gambling to, you know, potentially sell advertising on. There's a lot of opportunity to kind of help support this growing industry, and I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see a handful of Chicago startups pop up based on the new legalization of the whole industry.
All right. Read more at ChicagoInno.com. Catherine Davis, thanks for coming by. Jim Dahlke, go work on your tan.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. And we thank them for that. On a phone line now is Elise Glink. She's the publisher of ThinkLink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves, which is that HR app that helps employees deal with their financial stress, helps employers help their employees deal with the financial stress. I'm stressed out just thinking about it, Elise. How are you?
Well, we don't want you to be stressed, Steve. We want you to be relaxed, because that's what's valued in people who have are worried about their money.
I can go to bestmoneymoves.com and it will relax me. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there are lots of ways to relax about your money, de-stress. Let's see where we can dig in today.
I love this story. The Motley Crue, the Motley Fool, rather,
did a
study. I think it was more than 1,000 people, and they talked to respondents about romance, and then they sort of intertwined when people did things romantic, say first kiss, or they refer to it here as a sleepover, along a timeline, and how that corresponds to when they shared financial information, right? So had a sleepover 1 month in, let their partner borrow their credit card 2 months in. I don't know.
Yeah, it was sort of interesting. It was interesting to me in this study that it took a full year before of dating, before and presuming there's a few more sleepovers, before people felt comfortable in disclosing their full financial situation to somebody. And I thought that was a really interesting number.
Right. After 7 months, it says here, they cried in front of their partner or they disclosed their full medical history, but it wasn't until 10 months that they revealed debt that they've incurred.
Yeah, and 2 months into their relationship, they're giving their partners their credit card for the first time.
Right.
What?
Right.
What?
So what does this tell us overall? Is there anything we take from this?
You know, what I thought was interesting is how much we hold sacrosanct the idea of our money. That at the end of the day, you can talk to somebody all day long about their job, about sex, about their family, about politics even. But when it comes to our money, we're really really tight with that information.
More than a third of the couples surveyed said finances caused more stress than anything else in their relationship. So do you think that's because we are embarrassed by our numbers, or why do we keep it so close to our vest?
Well, I think it's because we don't know that person well enough to reveal
sleepovers
how
aside.
Our true sleepovers aside, so we know them carnally,
right.
As Steve Cochran might say, but we're not so sure we know them well enough to tell them that we owe money to people or that we don't have any money to spend. I think there's a lot of work in this world, particularly with young people on Instagram, that goes into trying to, you know, keep up with the Joneses. This is a whole new way of doing it, and in some ways, because it's so visual on Instagram and on YouTube, I think that there's this pressure that people are feeling that's almost more acute than it was before, and being able to reveal that maybe you don't have the money to do that is very scary for people.
Okay, you're no Dr. Ruth. I'll call you Dr. Elise.
okay.
Should we be talking about a financial situation a little bit up on the timeline, or is it okay to put it off this long?
If it were me, I think somewhere when you decide you're going to be exclusive, wherever that is, with that person, that's the time when I would sit down and have sort of the big let's open up the bag and see all the dirty stuff that's inside kind of conversation about your money. But I certainly at 2 months wouldn't be giving my credit card to somebody unless you are exclusive. If this is somebody you're going to spend the rest of your life with, there's just too many scary things out there. So you have to get to know each other a little bit.
78% of respondents agreed that committed couples should merge their finances. So let's make it marriage. Once you're married, to me, it's a no-brainer that you would combine and become one sort of financial entity. 78% think so. That means 22% don't. What do you think?
Well, you know, Sam and I certainly merged all of our money, what little we had, at the beginning. And he had a lot more than I did at the beginning, but I didn't have any debts. But we thought, well, we're just starting out. We should just have a joint credit card. But I have some friends, and they're on their second or, in some cases, third marriage. And I can understand why it took them 10 years after marriage to trust enough to do a joint bank account, and they still have some money that's separate. There's also reasons to keep money separate if you're inheriting money, right? You want to keep those assets in separate accounts and not commingle them.
Why?
Because that continues legally to give you control over that money, and it doesn't become part of the marital estate.
So if my wife inherits a bundle, and she can keep it separate, and then for some reason we were divorced in 10 years, that doesn't go toward what would be shared in the divorce settlement?
That is correct.
I never knew that.
Yeah, so the inherited money that comes to her in this example directly and stays in a separate account and is never commingled with marital assets stays hers, and it's her property. It's separate property. And for people who have had bad first marriages or who may have signed a prenup agreement, you know, keeping some separate accounts will make some sense.
Really, Elise, I did not know that. So if you're inheriting, well, that's a difficult conversation to have, though. I mean, if you're inheriting money and then you say, I just want to hedge my bets, I'm going to keep it over here.
And it's tough to do that, right? And you have to have a lot of trust to be able to tell people. So I, of course, have heard from listeners and readers over the years where they inherited money, they lied about what they inherited, they kept it completely separate because they weren't sure that the marriage was going to survive, and they didn't want the added pressure of knowing that there was this pot of money and their spouse saying, well, why don't you just use that?
Wow. So what's your advice to people if they inherit money? Should they keep it separate, or, well, what's your advice?
Well, I think you should keep it separate, and you should also update your will. But I think the real question is, when do you start talking to somebody? How do you start having that early conversation about money? And what does that look like? And how do you get over your nervousness to reveal your true state of financial affairs, the assets you have or may have, and the debts you carry?
One more from the 68% of men and 73% of women hoped their partners would follow a budget. What percentage of us really do follow a budget?
I sad to say, I think it's probably a third of people.
Yeah.
Even on Best Money Moves, we see that probably about 50% of the people who log in to the site, to a company site, are actually creating a budget. So only about half of everybody who logs in, and I would love it to be 100%, right. And there's some reasons that some people don't, but understanding
but even if you
how
take,
many
if
comes
you
in and out.
Even if you consider, though, the people, by logging into your site, they're already financially conscious. And if only half of them are creating a budget, that's got to be a pretty small number.
Well, what's really interesting is that we did our first usage survey, and we looked at the 10 companies that had been on Best Money Moves the longest over the past year and a half to 2 years. And actually, we have a usage rate of somewhere an average of 30%, but as high as almost 70%.
Wow.
And so half of those, about 35% in that company, 35 to 40% are creating budgets, and that's of the entire population of the company. So, you know, when you have a product that is good, what we've learned is that people are using it, but what they're using even more than the budget is they're reading and staying on the site and learning and using the tools to understand more about how the money comes into their pocket and how it goes out. And really, that's the whole point of Best Money Moves, is education and repetition.
That's why she came up with it. Elise Glink, thanks very much for joining us on this Monday.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Times are tense in the food industry right now. Alternative meats are thriving, agriculture is literally underwater, and the dairy industry has a tough road ahead of it because of the Fair Oaks Farm investigation videos that were released last week. The Northwest Indiana dairy farm is in hot water after video evidence of substantial animal abuse surfaced last week from an animal rights group. The company has already started to cut back on products and services as an investigation develops. There will definitely be changes happening at the farm soon, but the question is, will there be ripples in the larger industry? But if you want an even more in-depth look into business, then M-Hub is presenting Boss, the Black Experience in Business on Wednesday, June 12th. It's a documentary to help people understand what goes into creating a business and approaching it as a minority in this country. All you have to do is register at mhub.com, and you might learn a thing or two. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
That's Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. Okay, in the studio now is Amy Guth. She's the host of the daily podcast, The Daily Gist. And, okay, Amy, there's a story on cranes, and this is one where you're going to have to talk slowly to me.
So. This is one I had to read slowly.
it's about, as they say overseas, aluminium.
That's right.
One of the real cheerleaders for the aluminum tariff, a local company, right, that would, a U.S. company, obviously, that would benefit from the tariffs. The tariffs take effect, and they really haven't benefited at all.
Worse than that, worse than just
they've
not benefiting.
Suffered
they've
it.
Suffered, in fact. And as noted in the story, the plight of this one company in particular called Century, their CEO, he emerged as a loud voice in support of the tariffs.
Goes and visits the president,
early.
Right?
Yeah,
Wilbur
very
Ross
early
comes.
On. Really pushing this, very much in this, you know, made in USA cheerleader, really, you know, seemed to be hitting all those talking points. And now they've suffered, their stock has tanked because of the tariffs, and their plight has become this, it's a talking point for free market economists that show that even how tariff proponents can get swamped among unpredictable trade issues.
Because if they're an aluminum company,
right,
and other foreign aluminum companies are having their product suffer through tariffs, it's only natural that the local aluminum company would be better off.
That's exactly what one would think. But then there's all these issues attached to it that totally start. We see this in so many other industries, because it's not just a matter of let's pull this material out of the ground. It is bauxite ore that becomes this aluminum oxide. You have to get the ore first and extract the aluminum oxide. So you get that. There's all these layers of that become unpredictable things, that become issues of unseen things. So it becomes a story quickly about how it seems like the right thing, and on paper, the back of the envelope math works out, but then put into practical terms, the ripples don't work out, and the market revolts on it.
And so this company truly is, I mean, it's measurable, suffering because of the tariffs that were set out to help it.
Yeah, and they're the nation's second largest aluminum producer. So
wow.
That's a pretty significant one there. You know, it does... I think the part of this that's so interesting, but also the most difficult to understand, I myself had to read it several times to get
right.
my head around and start Googling a lot of things, was the part about the natural resources, about extracting this ore, turning it into this other material to then make aluminum, and then what happens from that process. And it reminds me of this really interesting book I read a couple of years ago about, it's called One, and this guy broke his iPhone and then started to trace every single part inside the iPhone.
Oh, I see, right.
And it led him to, you know, 10 mines around the world and all these interesting places. And that's where, it's in that supply chain where we see things backfire with unintended consequences.
Well, my goal this week on the show was to have someone trick someone into saying bauxite ore.
Well.
And here we did it on the very first day.
You are winning today.
Wow, how about that? Okay, so that's one of the stories coming up this week on the Daily Gist, right?
Yeah, that's coming up this week. Today we've got, I had a conversation with Danny Ecker about a new spot in the commercial real estate development world, and that's we're starting to see more nonprofit developers enter the market that take a look at a whole neighborhood, which is an interesting time because of Lightfoot's message about investing in neighborhoods,
right?
But then also balancing that with neighborhood depopulation. So we had a really interesting conversation there that ended up being really about.
Are these the guys rehabbing all the homes on the south side?
Well, housing is a big part of it, but there's also, you know, like for Sterling Bay to enter Inglewood and put in that Whole Foods, what is the psychological component of saying, you know, hey, this developer is coming to my neighborhood and mine?
All right, The Daily Gist, check it out at WGNRadio.com. Thanks for coming by, Amy.
Thanks so much.